This is Tech Talk with Mark Saltzman. Over the next hour, Mark will break down geek speak into street speak so you know what's hot, what's not, and why.
Hey everyone, welcome to Tech Talk. Hope you're all doing well on this first weekend of March. We have a great show planned for you today with four great guests and topics to get to, and we will. But before that, I wanted to first acknowledge the passing of my nephew, Lauren Meyer, at only age 35, who succumbed to cancer on Monday after a very long and tough battle, a two-year battle. Lauren, who's my brother-in-law's son-in-law, was an extraordinary guy, a loving husband to my 30-year-old niece, Rachel, and father of two beautiful little girls, an almost four-year-old, Riley Sky, and one-and-a-half-year-old, Sadie Gray. Lauren was a great guitar player. You're hearing him right now, by the way, in the background, playing an acoustic guitar with Riley as a baby sleeping on top of the guitar. It's an awesome video as well, and I'll play more of his work in a moment. But Lauren was also a car buff, including classic cars, as well as a world traveler and an amazing writer. In fact, as a journalist, I have to say, I was blown away when I read his blog posts. He documented the last couple of years on social media with such positivity. It was a blog called They Went There, and you can do a search on social media for that title, They Went There, to read it. It was written so beautifully, but heartbreaking at the same time. As a drummer, I had the privilege of jamming with Lauren about 9 months ago or so, which was super fun, and I'm grateful that we did that. Here's another clip of him, by the way, playing acoustic guitar with a vocalist named Tatiana Zavik. It's from a couple of years ago, playing the classic Nina Simone blues song, Feeling Good. Have a listen.
Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on the tree, you know how I feel.
Lauren, you will be missed by so many. May you rest in peace. And I'm also thinking of course, Rachel and her mom, Lisa, my brother-in-law, Adam, and Lauren's mom and siblings and many friends as well. And hey, Lauren loved technology too, gadgets and such. So I'm going to dedicate this show to him. We'll kick off the show with tips to protecting yourself in the digital age with McAfee in a moment, followed by advice from Home Equity Bank. On the back half of the show, a new social media app called Atmosfy that lets you record 10-second videos like little mini reviews at a restaurant to share with anyone, anywhere. And we'll talk with Sensible Weather about its spin on travel insurance that pays you back cash the same day if weather on your vacation turns sour. We'll hear how that works. So all of this and more on an all-new Tech Talk powered by Chevrolet Canada, which I'll tell you more about shortly. But let's officially kick off the show with our first interview. Not sure if any listeners are using AI on a regular basis with empowering tools like ChatGPT or Google Gemini, formerly Bard, but there is a downside to AI, artificial intelligence, in that it's also being used by cybercriminals to defraud you. And so who better to chat with about cybersecurity tips than McAfee, one of the biggest companies that protect you and your data. We're joined by Steve Grobman. He's CTO of McAfee. Hey, Steve, good to chat with you.
Hey, Mark, thanks for having me.
You were great to interview, by the way, for an AARP magazine article a couple months back. And it's too bad we couldn't connect at last month's Consumer Electronics Show in person, but thrilled to have you on the show today to discuss this very important topic.
Well, it's great to be here, and it's definitely a lot going on that is keeping us awake and making sure that we can take care of consumers.
So with that in mind, before we talk about new cyber threats and how to fight back, of course, please tell us a bit about McAfee.
Sure. So McAfee is now a pure play consumer security company. So we're defending consumers from all the threats that exist in their digital life, regardless of where they are, whether it's on their devices, in the cloud, even the threats that I know we're going to talk a lot about today related to new types of issues related to bad actors using AI. Mm-hmm. So we've been doing this for a long time, for over three decades. And we're protecting over 100 million customers around the world.
Wow. It would be remiss for me not to ask you why someone should consider McAfee, aside from your heritage. I mean, 3 decades.
Yeah, I think it really comes down to that our focus is on protecting the consumer. You know, we're not about selling eyeballs. We're about making sure that we give you the best defense against a wide range of threats, whether that's, you know, traditional malware that we detect, whether it's preventing you from going to a dangerous website, or whether it's using the best technology available to detect that a bad actor used generative AI to create a new scam or to trick you or a loved one into doing something that would have a bad outcome.
Mm. Unfortunately, those who fall victim to these scams are often the ones who can least afford it. And by the way, McAfee is what I use, McAfee Ultimate Family. And we will talk software and some solutions in a couple of moments. But let's now pivot and chat about AI and deepfakes, including how it relates to the election year. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the FCC just made robocalls made with fake voices illegal.
Yeah, that's right. And we applaud the FCC in taking a stand. But, you know, one of the challenges in cybersecurity is it's not like other crimes where the criminals are actually in close proximity to the victims. Cybercrime crosses geographic boundaries, and often the reach of law enforcement to go after the cyber criminals is really difficult. So while law enforcement will be part of the solution, tools, technology, education are also really critical in a comprehensive defense in preventing deepfakes from being an effective tool for bad actors.
So we're referring to these, sometimes it's audio, I think we're going to start seeing more video, where it sounds like someone you may recognize, like the President of the United States, but it's been generated with artificial intelligence and it's being used to deceive those who are hearing this or seeing this. Is that fair?
That's right. So what a deepfake is it's using information, usually either audio of a person or video of a person, that gets fed into a model, or a model is created from real audio or video of a person. And then once that model exists, you can create new audio or video of the person saying or doing anything. So this could be used for a wide range of nefarious and also entertainment purposes. So, you know, while we do see a lot of these deep fakes being things like parodies, scammers are using them for fake investment scams, using celebrities. We also see scams where they're endorsing a product or saying that a product is going to be given away for a very cheap price, but then it never shows up. There's also a lot of concern about deepfakes being used in politics. Clearly, being able to show a politician doing or saying something that they didn't actually do or say could cast them in a very different light. And we need to be aware that the technology to build these deepfakes has become a lot easier to use in 2024. And we expect the volume of deepfakes to be much higher than we've seen in previous years. So it's something that all of us need to be ready for.
Fair enough. And I just saw one of Oprah. It was a video that looked like Oprah, sounded like Oprah, endorsing some pharma product that wasn't really her. But you had to look twice.
Yeah. And Mark, that's one of the key things that we've observed is I very often get asked, how can I detect a deepfake? And it's really hard for humans to look for, you know, technical characteristics that would give away that high quality audio or video deepfake is fake. And that's why it's a combination of education, that if you see something that just doesn't seem right, or it's a deal that sounds too good to be true, but also combining that with what I think of as using AI to detect bad uses of AI or detect that AI is being used. So a lot of what McAfee is doing is investing in how do we use the most advanced AI techniques to look for, you know, micro characteristics that would be in the audio or video that would be able to call out that this is fake. And then we can go ahead and inform the user. So as an example, over the last few weeks at CES, we introduced something called Project Mockingbird, which is our technology that looks for AI-generated signals in audio, so we can tell whether audio, typically in a video, is real or fake. And, you know, we'll be looking forward to making that technology available to our customers so they can help identify whether something is real or not.
We're joined by Steve Gropman. He's Chief Technical Officer at McAfee, one of the leading cybersecurity companies on the planet. We're talking how to spot and stop deepfakes. So the answer is education, software, like what McAfee is offering, and we'll get to that in a moment. And I know deepfakes are also being used to trick employees into sending money somewhere because it, again, sounds like the boss on the phone telling you to wire, you know, a few $100,000 to this client here in this country. And I'm assuming video is next. So, and at this point, yes, you can maybe tell that Oprah's lips weren't quite moving properly or Biden's mouth, and it's, you can tell there, it's not perfect, but I think it's only going to get better, unfortunately. And so with Valentine's Day last week, romance scams were in the news again. Is this also deepfake related or is this something different?
Yeah, you know, just as almost every business is using AI, we see the same thing in cybercrime, where every type of scam is looking at how they can effectively use various types of AI in order to be more effective at tricking victims.
Steve Grobman's been our guest. McAfee.com for more. Thanks so much once again. All the best.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
So again, it's a combination of education, making sure that you and your loved ones know that these scams exist, as well as strong software like what McAfee offers. Again, that's mcafee.com. When we return on Tech Talk, March is Fraud Prevention Month, and so we are going to chat with Home Equity Bank for some eye-opening stats that they've got and tips to fighting back against fraudsters. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more Tech Talk.
Breaking down geek speak into street speak. You're listening to Tech Talk with Mark Saltzman, Canada's go-to tech authority for the past 25 years. Here's Tech Talk.
Welcome back to Tech Talk, powered by Chevrolet Canada. The all-new 2023 Chevrolet Colorado has leveled up its tech. Inside, its 10 available camera views, 11.3 diagonal infotainment display, and fully digital driver information center make this the truck of the future. The all-new 2023 Chevrolet Colorado was made for more. Start your adventure today at Chevrolet.ca. March is Fraud Prevention Month, an ideal time to remind Canadians about all the ways fraudsters are trying to separate you from your wallet. To talk with us about a new poll commissioned by Home Equity Bank, we're joined by Vivian Gauci. She's Senior Vice President at Home Equity Bank. Great to chat with you again, Vivian.
Hi, Mark. Great being here again.
Before we talk about your new poll tied to fraud and scams, please tell us a bit about Home Equity Bank.
Well, Home Equity Bank, we're a Schedule I federally regulated bank, and we've been around for over 35 years. And we're better known as the providers of the chip reverse mortgage. And because of that, we are really the only bank in Canada that deals exclusively with Canadians age 55 plus. So that means that we work with our clients to help them live retirement on their terms by accessing the equity in their home. And so basically being able to stay in the homes they love while being able to afford their retirement that they deserve.
Great. Yeah, I know I've written about Home Equity Bank for the likes of Zoomer, and I know that you focus on that demographic. So that kind of leads me to my next question before we talk about this poll, and that is why a Canadian would consider Home Equity Bank instead of one of the big five. You talked about the chip reverse mortgage. Would you say that's the key differentiator?
Of course. So, well, we obviously work with all the banks across Canada because they actually don't offer a reverse mortgage. Mm. And for retirees, it can be difficult sometimes to qualify for some of the more conventional bank products. So they actually refer clients to us, and we work with them. We work in partnership with all the banks to make sure we can help address the needs of retired Canadians in this stage in life when they need some extra funds, maybe to repair a roof, maybe to help out with healthcare needs of loved ones. So, you know, we actually work very closely with all the banks to make sure that we address the needs of retired Canadians.
Awesome. It makes sense to tap into the equity that you have in your home to consolidate your debt, or as you said, to help your loved ones age in place, which refers to living longer independently at home. You may want to install like a stair lift, like a chair lift or something, and you can use those extra funds.
And we're specialists in this category, right? So just like you might want to go to a specialist to make sure that they know what it is that you need, we specialize in working with retired Canadians, and we specialize in reverse mortgages. So that's why the banks also trust us to take care of their clients.
Not to get too off topic, but I just read another headline today about Canadians looking to augment their CPP and all that. It's just not enough for many, unfortunately, these days to live off of. So knowing that this option exists is great. Without further ado, I did want you to tell us about this new Ipsos poll conducted on behalf of Home Equity Bank. What did you set out to find with it?
So we wanted to know, right? It's a bit of a tired punchline. Older people are more likely to fall victims to scammers because they're less tech savvy. Mm-hmm. So they're more susceptible to being tricked. And so what we actually found through our research is, yes, indeed, all Canadians, so we're not alone in thinking this, all Canadians, two-thirds of Canadians actually polled think boomers or baby boomers are the most likely generation to fall victim to online scams. And while it's very true that they're targeted more frequently, you know, we had done some previous research, we find that basically over half of Canadians in this age bracket say that they've been targeted by scammers. Right. We find that when it comes to falling for the actual scams, it's not more prevalent in one group or another. So really, although, you know, the data would suggest that people think that they're more likely to fall to scams, they actually aren't.
So I like that. Aging adults are equally, if not more, vigilant than their younger counterparts when it comes to sensing online fraud, and despite boomers being perceived as being the most likely to be the victims.
Absolutely. And so what happens is because they are more targeted, they are a lot more vigilant. What happens is they're more concerned about fraud. And so what we also saw in the study is that they're more careful because they're always, they tend to be thinking about it a lot more than everybody else. So, for example, they tend to be more concerned about it. They're thinking about it more often. About 85% of them say they're thinking about it all the time versus 76% of all the other generations. So what's happening is they are absolutely being targeted. So they're more vigilant. And so therefore, they're being more careful online.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Because I know that even things like grandparent scams, where you may be notified perhaps over social media in a direct message from what appears to look like it's from your grandson or granddaughter, AI, artificial intelligence, is actually making this issue worse because it's making them, in some cases, sound like their kids. And soon it will be commonplace for them to look like their grandkids, you know, by using just a short snippet of maybe a little video that innocently somebody shared on Facebook, and it's being used by malicious types out there to turn the tables and try to trick grandma and grandpa. I know that AI is making it worse. So it's great that they're being vigilant. Their back is up. It's too bad they're thinking about this 85% of the time instead of enjoying their time online.
It's all of us that have to be aware because mm-hmm. these scams and these tactics keep getting more and more sophisticated. Mark, you mentioned AI. You mentioned voice synthesis. There's mm-hmm. all these types of tools and techniques and approaches being used nowadays to really, really make it very risky for all of us to be engaging in online behaviors. And we're finding also in our research, all Canadians seem to be engaging in somewhat questionable online behaviors. Things like connecting to public Wi-Fi, saving personal information online, on public use computers, or even using the same password across multiple accounts. And actually, in fact, what we're finding is that it's actually the younger generations that are engaging in this more risky behavior as opposed to the older generations.
I'm going to ask you more about that in a moment. We are chatting with Vivian Gauci. She's SVP at Home Equity Bank. March is Fraud Prevention Month, and so Home Equity Bank commissioned a study through Ipsos tied to fraud and scams and what Canadians need to know about them. It sounds ironic to me, Vivian, that Canadians take cybersecurity seriously, or they say they do in this poll, yet many engage in these unsafe online behaviors.
Well, that's just it, right? So the generations that have grown up with this, maybe they've gotten too comfortable. Mm-hmm. And they're so comfortable with this that they just think that everything's going to be okay. And so it really comes down to the fact that the older generations are less likely to engage in risky behavior. So what we found was, while only 71% of the baby boomer generation was doing things like going in to connect to public Wi-Fi and saving their personal information on these public websites and then using the same password, we found that basically over 90% of the other generations had said that they had engaged in these behaviors. So that's where you start to see that even though baby boomers may be more targeted, they're actually just as likely to fall victim to scams as anyone else. They're not more likely, just as likely as everyone else, because they're actually engaging in less risky behaviors overall.
So with that in mind, why don't we end off on ways to protect ourselves better online? Interviews like this certainly help in spreading the word with your loved ones. They may believe a call that they're getting that they really are from, you know, Microsoft or your internet service provider or Amazon, or a text or email that looks legit but isn't. So what could we leave our listeners with for additional tips?
Well, there's some great news here, Mark. First of all, we know that almost every Canadian, 9 out of 10 Canadians, have indicated that they are willing to learn more. And so education is always the first step. Knowledge is power. And so being willing to educate yourself into, you know, what are the most recent scams? What are the tactics that scammers are using? That's important. We also have developed ourselves a new quiz online where all Canadians are welcome to test their scam sense and find out if they are unscammable. And it's a good way to keep your skills up to date. We have that at our website, chip.ca/fraud. That's chip.ca/fraud, where you can go and check your own unscammable score. And we also recommend that everyone check out the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center website to keep up to date on what the latest scams are.
Awesome. chip.ca/fraud. Thank you so much for carving out some time to talk about this important topic.
Mark, thank you so much for having me here. It was great.
We'll learn all about the social media platform Atmosfy when we return on Tech Talk. Stay with us.
You're listening to Tech Talk, where you won't need a Geek to English dictionary to tune in. Welcoming back our host, Mark Saltzman.
No one wants to blow their hard-earned money on a lame restaurant, especially on a date, right? So we tend to look for reviews of places that we want to go before we book a reservation, of course. And if it's true a picture is worth 1,000 words, then a video is worth 1,000 pictures, which leads us to Atmosfy, a video review platform already spanning more than 10,000 cities. Joining us to tell us all about Atmosfy is Michael Ebel. He's founder and CEO of the company. Good to chat with you, Michael. Thanks for your time.
Hi, Mark. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Why don't we dive right in? At a high level, what is Atmosfy all about? And for our listeners, Atmosfy is spelled Atmosfy.
Yeah, Atmosfy is a video-first review platform, right? So we are revolutionizing the way that people discover experiences. Those have long been, you know, written reviews on platforms like Yelp or Google, right? And more recently, we know that, you know, younger folks and Gen Z are really enjoying the happenstance nature of video on TikTok. And so Atmosfy marries those concepts, right? Allows you to be able to browse through, you know, engaging 10-second videos and find experiences. It is located by cities, so every city has its own feed, and you can filter down and be able to find exactly what you're looking for across dining or nightlife or travel, really all experiences that are important, folks.
All right, so not just restaurants, which we'll get to more in a moment, but I did want to ask you, so I guess it's kind of like TikTok meets Yelp, if I may. So
yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
Okay, so it's been said good technology solves a problem. What's wrong with other apps that let you rate restaurants, like you mentioned Google or Yelp, or video-centric social media platforms that already exist, like Instagram or TikTok?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's really what has sort of struck a chord with so many, you know, folks in our user base and is really propelling our growth. I think, you know, I was a bartender once upon a time, and I can tell you that, you know, the local review landscape can be tough for local businesses. It's a little bit of a sort of downward biased ecosystem. Sometimes folks, you know, are sort of incentivized to be able to kind of highlight the negative, and, you know, the positive sometimes goes unsung. And I think that, paired with the fact that It's really tough to know at the end of the day if the folks that are leaving kind of anonymous reviews are like you, right? In terms of, does this person like the same things I do? And so, you know, when I was at Instagram, I really saw video as the opportunity to be able to disrupt that. If you were going to rebuild sort of a brand new approach to a review platform, you know, it would be really what we've done at Atmosphy, which would be video first and very socially injected. On the other side of the house, you know, thinking about people discovering, you know, experiences on TikTok, that's obviously, you know, very happenstance. Those platforms are built for high level entertainment. And when you find something, it's great, but it's often a frustrating experience to try to drill down into your city and really find something specific that you're looking for, not just in sort of a random capacity, right? And so that is where Atmosphy marries a lot of the utility that you would find on a more traditional review platform with the social engagement that is so attractive on platforms like TikTok and Instagram.
Could you walk us through how it works? So like you said, it can be used for a restaurant or other businesses that you may want to check out. So you first download the app and then you do a search specifically for that restaurant you heard about or that museum or art exhibit or what have you?
Yeah. So the platform is segmented into a couple of different tabs. And so each city in the world, we're across 10,000 cities in more than 150 countries. And we've got local creators all over the world. And each city essentially has its own live feed. And that feed can be filtered by, you know, bar or restaurant or cuisine, whatever you're looking for. There's also a map that gives you more of a traditional kind of geocentric view, right, of your city and the ability to see what's happening and, you know, what's around you, right? From a sort of leaving review standpoint, right, we allow customers that are at establishments to really be creators and highlight a, you know, a 6 to 10 second video review of their experience, which allows them to be able to capture, memorialize their experiences and add them to their personal travel map, which then becomes shareable as well.
All right. Yeah. I'm going to ask you more about the incentive for leaving a video review at an establishment in a moment. So you're saying that you don't have to necessarily know where you want to go, like, you know, XYZ restaurant in Toronto or whatever. You can say the kind of cuisine, just to stick with that example of a restaurant, you can say the cuisine you're in the mood for and the city that you're in. And that's another way of looking at content on Atmosphy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of the magic, right? There, you certainly can, you know, research a specific restaurant or a specific nightlife establishment if you want to. But part of what we heard from users in what was sort of broken early on is people want some ability of sort of happenstance discovery, right? Okay. The ability, hey, I'm looking for something in this genre, but not exactly sure what I'm looking for. And that's kind of part of our secret sauce, is to be able to surface a bunch of great, viable options to the user and leave it up to them. Looks good.
We're chatting with Michael Ebel. He is founder and CEO of Atmosphy. That's Atmosfy. This is an app, presumably for both iOS and Android. We'll get to all that. To not just discover places to frequent, but to watch reviews of them with a video-centric approach. And I did want to ask you, and you sort of touched on this earlier, Michael, that often the reviews that people would leave, it's often only when they have a bad experience that they are compelled to share it. I mean, how do you incentivize people to leave a video review of, again, say a restaurant, who was an okay experience? Like, what's the incentive for them other than documenting their visit there? Does it have to be a polarizing experience in order for someone to leave a video review?
I think there's two main components to sort of the why. I mean, there's obviously others at the sort of individual level, but the two main ones are, one, you know, to support local businesses. I think coming out of the pandemic, people are keenly aware of how difficult it's been for local businesses, and this offers the opportunity to sort of give them a tip, right? To take a video and say, I had a good experience. I want to put this on the map. I want to share this with someone else, right? And sort of support that business. So that's one. And the second is this notion that we sort of term it Atmosphy as the passport stamp effect, which is the fact that, you know, people go places and a lot of people are taking great videos already that are really just living and dying on your camera roll. They don't have a great place to post them unless you're, you know, a hardcore food blogger that's, you know, sort of doing that for a living, right? And so this provides a vehicle to be able to capture that experience, put it on your map, reflect on it, share it with friends, and provide value to the community. And so those are the two main reasons that people are so incentivized to post and support businesses.
And hey, maybe if it's a good review, the restaurant will be happy. And the next time you go there, you'll get a free drink or something.
There you go.
You always hear about stuff like that. What's next for you, Michael, and Atmosfy?
Yeah, I think, you know, the platform is continuing to invest in just making it easier and easier to be able to discover experiences and also to build hyperlocal, you know, city level connection, right? That helping people through shared experiences be able to foster connection. We know that's a big want from people, especially coming out of the pandemic, that there's a loneliness epidemic and all of that. And Atmosfy provides the ability to, in some sense, meet other people in your city and see what they're doing through their experiences. And so continuing to make sure that the platform provides connection at the city level.
Yeah, I never even thought about that. It could be a matchmaking platform as well. Can you follow somebody on Atmosfy and see where they just had dinner and sort of reach out to them, or is that not what it's built for?
Yeah, so it essentially layers a social graph, you know, on top of it now. So you can see where your friends are going and get updates where your friends have been. You can follow folks and be able to follow specific, you know, people in your city that sort of share your tastes. And so you know, that on our roadmap is something that we're continuing to dive into. We also are partnering with large celebrities like Kygo, who's an investor of ours, to be able to give large giveaways and say, you know, we're an experience-based product and we want to provide world-class experiences for our user that they can participate in and win. And so there's a lot of sort of fun ancillary things that we're adding to the product to continue to enrich the user experience.
Great. And then finally, where can we learn more?
Yeah, atmosfy.io. We're live, obviously, on the web, and you can head to the App Store, check us out on iOS, or head to the Google Play Store if you're on Android.
All right, great. Michael, Ebel, great to talk to you. Thanks so much for chatting with us today. All the best. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, before we take a short break and then catch up with Sensible Weather, just a reminder to properly dispose of your old tech, your end-of-life electronics. It's never been easier to do it. Simply go to recyclemyelectronics.ca, typing in your postal code or your address, and you'll find one of many drop-off locations near you, and it's completely free to do so. Again, it's recyclemyelectronics.ca. That's recyclemyelectronics.ca. Stick with us. More Tech Talk coming right up after this short break. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk. Called A Better Way to Protect Against the Weather, Sensible Weather is a climate risk technology company that says it gives peace of mind to travelers concerned about unpredictable weather ruining their travel plans. To tell us what the service is exactly, how it works, and who it's for, we're joined by Sensible Weather's CEO and co-founder, Nick Cavanaugh. Hi, Nick. Thanks for your time today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure. So at a high level, what is Sensible Weather and how does it work?
So Sensible Weather is a weather and climate data software company. What we do is we process tons and tons of data around consumers' travel plans to offer a product that we call a weather guarantee. What the weather guarantee does is when you're in destination, whether that's you're skiing for a long weekend or you're in Hawaii, we process data in real time. And when the weather is less than ideal, we send you a text message with the opportunity to get a reimbursement for that day's daily rate.
All right. So weather guarantee, is it like an insurance policy of sorts?
It's similar, many similar characteristics. However, in many ways, it's very different. The key differentiating factor between weather guarantees and traditional insurance is there is no claims process. Behind the scenes, we're processing lots and lots of data around where you are, where you purchased your weather guarantee to know a priori when something has gone wrong, when Mother Nature hasn't cooperated. And so we trigger claims automatically. We actually send users a text message that says, hey, we know you're in Waikiki at this hotel. It's going to be a rainy day. Click here to get your reimbursement.
Yeah, I like that because I think the paperwork associated with filing a claim to an insurance policy that you may have already paid for is enough of an obstacle to just forget about it, right? You know, I remember with COVID and all that, it was like, you know, all the red tape to just get reimbursed or credited for a trip that we had to cancel. So I like that idea. All right. So with Hawaii in mind, walk us through how it works again, please. So let's say I book a family vacation to Maui in July. It's hurricane season. We arrive at the resort. Everything's fine that one day, but then things take a turn for the worse. What exactly happens, and how do you come up with that rate that you are reimbursing your customers?
So when you're booking your trip and you're on your hotel's website or maybe an OTA where you're going to be booking that lodging.
And what's OTA? I'm sorry.
The online travel agent, Expedia or Booking.
Say. Got it. Thank you for the clarification.
So you'll have selected the location, of course, the hotel that you're staying at, as well as the dates that you're going. That allows us to look at a lot of data around that trip and build a type of coverage, which will automatically reimburse if during the days that you're going to that hotel, you receive a certain amount of rain or it's, you know, hotter or colder than a certain temperature. All that is done dynamically. So at the time when you're booking your trip, we use that information to build you a product that is custom for you. You would then opt into that. It would be added on to the cart. Again, when you're booking through the hotel itself in your general booking path, and that product would be added onto your cart. When you're in destination, when you're there the morning of a rainy day, we're essentially checking real-time weather, radar, satellite, and forecasts. And if the day triggers policy, we send you a text message to say it's going to rain for 3 hours this afternoon. Your weather guarantee for the day is eligible for a reimbursement. Click here. Once you click a hyperlink, it would send you to our internal app we call Sunshine, and you'll see a couple of options how you can receive payout.
Cool.
Venmo, PayPal, or ACH.
If it's a couple drops of rain, that's not a big deal. But is it like a certain amount of time or a certain amount of rainfall, just to stick with your example?
Yeah, we orient our policies based on duration. So it's a certain amount of time. Found out early on that the amount of time that rains in a particular day is what actually impacts it, not how hard it rains.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, so we orient our policies generally between 1 and 4 hours of rain would be where per day is where your trigger would be set. That trigger varies depending on time of year and location. So essentially the risk of it raining that much is contextual based on your vacation. And we build a policy for that context.
And I'm sure the premiums will vary accordingly as well, which we'll get to in a moment. One of our favorite places to travel is the Caribbean islands. And sometimes it rains every day for, half an hour, it'll pour and then it's great. So I guess something like that is probably deemed acceptable with sensible weather. As a side note, Nick, can you talk to us about weather becoming less predictable these days? I mean, is it a fact? Is it science? Or is it something that just seems like there's more storms and natural disasters than ever before?
When I think about predictability, I think about two things. One is how well can a weather forecast predict something? And the other type of predictability is how usual or unusual is this weather event within the context of general climate? What we've seen with climate change is we're seeing more and more unusual weather events, which is certainly one type of unpredictability. We are seeing, for example, fewer hurricanes, but the ones that we have are stronger. They tend to go further north, for example. So certainly through that lens, we are seeing more and more unusual weather, and the patterns of weather are changing over time. While that's not a requirement for our business to be successful, it's certainly something that we're looking to protect against.
We are chatting with Nick Cavanaugh. He is the Chief Executive Officer and co-founder of Sensible Weather. That's also the name of the platform. We'll talk about how to get going in a moment. Is it a website? Is it an app? Both, when we wrap things up with Nick. But we're learning how this works, where it's almost like a travel insurance policy, so to speak, whereby you would pay a couple of dollars to ensure you're going to have some good weather on your trip that you've spent probably hundreds, if not thousands of dollars on. So makes a lot of sense. Without getting too technical, Nick, how does Sensible Weather build its platform? I think you said earlier you study models and all that. So is it based on historical data or predictive analysis or a bit of both?
Both, as well as real-time observations. So we built an entire climate data platform in-house. The reason we needed to build it in-house is in order to enable the type of scale that we see in consumer hospitality markets. Offering tens of thousands of these quotes a minute is really what's required. And no data platform existed out there to fit that type of speed and scale. So we built everything in-house. We use both historical data, real-time observations, and forward-looking weather forecasts to understand the odds of various weather events at a certain place in a certain time of year, and build the policy dynamically around that data.
Mm-hmm. And is there a percentage by which you can give us an example of like what a premium would look like?
So it varies by location as well as time of year, but generally speaking, weather guarantees fall between 5% and 10% of what you're spending. Similar price to what traditional travel insurance costs, around 7%. That allows us to build a certain amount of coverage, which consumers find valuable. So we found that that's really the sweet spot where we can provide real value to a consumer such that they are actually getting reimbursed when bad things happen on their trips.
All right. So a $5,000 trip, about $250 to insure it against weather?
That'd be correct.
Okay, fair enough. And then it's bad just 2 out of those, say, 7 days. So you get back that day's worth out of the 7. You get maybe 2 days reimbursed. Is it the hotel part or flight, both?
So most of the time we're partnered with the hotels. So it'd be the room rate. If you're booking a bundled vacation package, it's so-called average daily rate, which is take your $5,000 that you spent for the week, divide it by 7.
Got it.
Each day that your weather guarantee is met, you'd get 1/7 reimbursement for the entire trip. If it's a complete rain out, you'd get all $5,000 back.
Huh, wow. And I guess any pricey excursions that I may want to go on, can you augment the policy with that or no? That's just not included.
So we also partner with lots of activities providers. For example, we're partner with the PGA covering tee times. We partner with a number of ski resorts covering dated tickets. Generally, those are sold individually when you're booking the, you know, your golf tee time or your ski resort tickets. But as I said, unless it's a bundle with a larger vacation package.
Before we wrap up, Nick, are weather guarantees a relatively new thing? If they're not, what would separate sensible weather from the pack?
Yeah, so they're a relatively new thing. They stand separate from traditional travel insurance, as well as a new product, cancel for any reason insurance, which has popped up. What we're really trying to do is enhance the experience when you're in destination. We're oriented towards the trip where you don't want to cancel it. You're going on the trip. It's just not quite what you expected. This is most of the time. Most consumers, when they book a vacation, do not want to cancel their trip. They do not want to file a travel insurance claim. So really, we're really oriented towards maximizing the value for the consumer when they do go on those vacations 9 times out of 10.
And you said the credits happen pretty quick, right? Should there be like one nasty day on your trip to Cancun, you're going to get reimbursed by Sensible Weather pretty quickly, like while you're still there?
Same day. We think that's incredibly important. Put some money in your pocket on the day that is not quite so good.
And then finally, where can we learn more?
You can check out our website, www.sensibleweather.com. You can book weather guarantees exclusively through our merchant partners. We do not sell direct. So when you are booking your hotel, you will find it in the checkout flow.
It would be an option when you check out to add a sensible weather guarantee to it. It's your partners' websites, the hotels and resorts and such.
That's correct.
Right. Hey, Nick, thanks so much for your time. Sensibleweather.com. Thanks again, Nick.
Thanks very much.
And thank you to the listener for tuning in and to our sponsors, LG Electronics Canada and Chevrolet.ca. Have a great rest of your weekend, everyone. And I look forward to catching up with you next weekend for another episode of Tech Talk. Bye-bye for now.
Don't forget to tune in to Tech Talk next weekend for more tech news you can use, interviews, reviews, and how-tos. Tech Talk with Mark Saltzman.